Welcome to a new segment here at Misanthropy Movie Blog, the Descent with Modification podcast. Here, I'll be joined by a guest to discuss adapted films and how they stack up to their source materials and predecessors in the medium. Today, we'll be starting with the Marvel anti-hero The Punisher, who has been depicted on screen in three features, one short film, and is set to be a prominent fixture in the upcoming season of Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix. Join us now for some thoughts on the character and his various on-screen appearances. Welcome to a new thing that I'm calling the Descent with Modification podcast, where we take one of the many adaptations into movies from over the past few years and talk about whether the original source material or the latest adaptation is better. That's the very clever Descent with Modification title. Yeah, this is yet another podcast along with the Plotopsy podcast here at Misanthropy Movie Blog, and I am joined today by Sam Gerard.
Yes, dude.
Yeah, so, what are we talking about today?
So, today I'm thinking we were going to talk about The Punisher and talk about how, going into second season of Daredevil on Netflix, how past adaptations look and what we can expect from Jon Bernthal's Punisher.
I am very excited. I think a lot of people are really excited about this version of The Punisher.
He definitely has a good track record, as far as characters are concerned. I may just be basing that off of Walking Dead, but yeah. He does seem to, like, have the chops for it, and just from, like, what we've seen from Shane, I think we could be really optimistic for what The Punisher will bring. I don't know if that's a thing.
So we can talk a bit about what we've seen so far. So this is being recorded before the second season of Daredevil has been released, so we've seen a number of trailers at this point. Mm-hmm. I agree. I have every confidence in the showrunners, and Daredevil in general has... And the Marvel Cinematic Universe on the street level, particularly, I think has done a really good job with a lot of characters so far. I think Daredevil looks great. Mm-hmm. I think Jessica Jones was fantastic. Like, the way that they did that character and did it in a very interesting way. I think Luke Cage is something to be really excited about, too.
Yeah.
So far, I have not been disappointed. Obviously, Kingpin is the best version of that character we may ever see.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. So I have every reason to be excited about it. That said... It certainly has been said, and I think many would agree, that The Punisher has not been done justice in the past.
Ironic, because he was created just to bring justice.
I know, it's very poetic and sad. But, I don't know, there's a lot of debate over the previous Punisher movies, of which there have been three. 1989, there was an Ozploitation, Australian-made exploitation-style action movie starring Dolph Lundgren, which is probably the least seen of the three, that didn't get a theatrical release in the United States, but I think it's a great little exploitation movie. Then there was the 2004 Punisher with Thomas Jane, which I don't hate that movie either. We can talk about that in a bit, because I think that's probably the most well-known Punisher movie so far.
Yeah.
With John Travolta and Thomas Jane. And then after that, I don't remember what year that was. Maybe 2008 was Punisher Warzone. I don't remember exactly when it was.
Was that meant to be a sequel or just like a remake?
So that's actually an interesting case where initially it was planned as a sequel. And then I believe the director stepped back, and then Thomas Jane stepped back, and they kept it in production, and then hired Lexi Alexander, who is a pretty well-known social media presence and director who did Green Street Hooligans, which is a pretty good movie, and was sort of hired as a hired gun to do this movie. So it is a quasi-sequel. I think officially, canonically, they are not connected, but the production histories are very connected. And apart from that, which a lot of people really like Warzone, I wasn't a big fan of it, but apparently in the mind of many people that are fans of the comic books, that is the most honest adaptation of the character from how he is in the books. There is one other Punisher film, which is a short film, which Thomas Jane did, where he takes on the Punisher role once again, called Dirty Laundry, which I've talked to other people that absolutely love it, and I saw it recently for the first time and thought it was really good. But again, it's a short film. It's very short form. You're talking about like less than 10 minutes of Thomas Jane, and he'd already kind of gotten into the character, but it was an interesting case. So we've seen The Punisher adapted a few times now. So I guess there's a question here. Like, I think a lot of people like Warzone because they actually did storyboarding based on the comic book. Like, they took direct scenes from the comic book and then filmed them, like, things that would... And recreated them. My thing about that is, I think this is sort of a debate to be had about the nature of adaptations, is when you do an adaptation, should it be the director's vision, regardless of whether that vision is the same as the original creator's, or should it be a straight adaptation of the original content? And, like, a good example of this is The Shining, which Stanley Kubrick made that his own. And The Shining movie is not the same as The Shining book by any sense. Yeah. Stephen King wasn't happy with it at all. But I think that there's something to be said that I think a really great adaptation should make a story its own rather than be just a transfer of medium.
Yeah. I could see Daredevil. What's the guy? Punisher.
Yeah.
That we're going to be seeing in the upcoming series as being more of a puzzle piece that fits in well with what we've seen so far of Daredevil. Mostly just because that's sort of where he's just being placed. Cause I don't really think there was much in the MCU about Daredevil and Punisher overlapping. So I think a lot of it is just how he's going to fit in as like this. Cause ultimately, Punisher is an anti-hero. He's not really designed as like that epitome villain that we saw in Kingpin, but we could also expect to see like just more of that like ambiguity superheroes that are not quite superheroes, but are not bad guys either, like that we saw in the 1990s. But I don't know. I could see Jon Bernthal's Punisher as being more of like a testing Daredevil more, not really fitting so much with like what we've seen in like those few Punisher. It's the same.
I know, it's right? Like, it's really easy to mix them up.
I used to mix up Daredevil and Deadpool just because they were like both costumes and
yeah. They're
both cool dudes, but that's besides the point. But yeah, I could see this upcoming version of Punisher being really different than the incarnation that we saw in Thomas Jane. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a much darker Punisher, which I don't know if that's totally possible, but it'll be.
I know. You can't really picture a light version of Punisher. I agree. Yeah. I think Punisher, this is the right time to have Punisher, because I think they've timed this very specifically with Civil War.
Yeah.
Come out around the same time. I think this season of Daredevil is going to be very much about ethical issues of superheroism and vigilantism. Because in the movies where Punisher is the main focus, I feel like there is, like, there's going to be a glorification of that character because he's your central figure, even if they do present it as sort of a gray area. Whereas when he's the antagonist, like the way that they've set up here, I think that actually makes a more interesting point of, like, making, I think it will actually, he'll serve as a really good vessel for Daredevil to develop. Like, he is...
To grasp of his own concept of morality.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that will fit really... I think that that's going to be dealt with a lot in Civil War as well. I think it's kind of hard to split the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I don't think we can really talk about their television Netflix series without talking a little bit about the movies that are intertwined with them. Because I feel like they're intentionally going by these similar timelines. Their release dates are pretty well aligned with what's going on in their fictitious universe.
And one thing I really like about the Netflix series... of any of those Marvel shows, is they don't play off of the Avengers as much as you'd expect out of a show like that. So they do have a good job. They do a good job of creating a storyline that's pretty standalone and can stand alone. And they just have some creative Easter eggs in there occasionally, like in one of the journalist's office, there's a newspaper from the Battle of New York that happened in the Avengers. Or they reference something about talking to... I think it was one of the scenes in, like, Jessica Jones where they were, like, terrified of, like, the superheroes and thought they were all bad guys. It was, like, the paranoid cult.
Yeah, that was like that. That was my favorite part of Jessica Jones, maybe. And it was a very, like, minimal, like, background thing.
I couldn't remember if they were referring specifically to Captain America in that or Iron Man or something. But they were talking about how they're like...
I think it was probably the Hulk, if anybody.
Oh, maybe it was the Hulk. Yeah, I can't remember. I keep forgetting about
that. Honestly, Hulk. I haven't rewatched Jessica Jones yet, but I do remember that part. I feel like Hulk... Although I guess Hulk is sort of out of the picture at the moment. We'll see what happens with that.
It seemed... Yeah, from the end of Ultron, it seemed like he was sort of like...
Peacing out.
So, I mean, that's sort of what we saw, like, at the end of Ultron. We saw a lot of, like... Captain America devoting himself to just, like, assembling the new Avengers, and not really... And same with, like, Tony Stark. It's like he, like, drove away to the sunset with Bruce Banner in the car.
Yeah,
That sort of thing. So, I don't know. I think a lot of it is going to, like, sort of set up... I think, and even in Daredevil with the Punisher, I think a lot of it is sort of pre-set up by this vague power vacuum that's sort of prompting Civil War. So it's like the necessity of, do we regulate the superheroes that we know of and have them registered through this, like, UN Registry Act, or do we actually, like, just let them go out and do their own thing because we trust that they're going to do the best thing? And, you know, even with the trailers, we've seen, like, the tension in people that are like, we don't know who these superheroes are, they... Because $45 billion in damages, so...
Exactly.
How can we truly trust
them?
And
the fact that there's not, like, a universal moral compass for the superheroes, they all have very different ideas of what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, as Punisher fits into all this, I think he's, like, the best example of a hero, in quotation marks, who has a really odd and skewed moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
Which realistically, when you deal with all these backgrounds of heroes, they often come from these really tragic backgrounds. So you would think that, that's going to happen. You're going to get some people with really militant views of morality.
Yeah. And the character of Punisher seemed to just have this natural impetus toward violence just in the first place, because he was in Vietnam and he volunteered for another tour in Vietnam, and then when they wouldn't give him a third tour, he actually changed his name to sound more like white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, because he had some Italian name at first. And Paul Castiglione
I have not read a lot of Punisher,
But he did that, and then, like, the way that he became, like, the Punisher is his family witnessed, a mob killing, and so they became targets of the mob themselves, and the mob was, like, absolutely ruthless, and he was the only one who survived that, so he, like, basically just went insane, like, who can we trust if the police are in the pocket of the mob, and the government officials are in the pocket of the mob, too? So he sort of just, like, created the Punisher by necessity.
Yeah, it's a natural sort of... That's why vigilantism starts in the real world, is when there's a frustration with the lack of power, ability to do anything. That's actually where the mob came from, ironically enough.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But one thing I see as being interesting, and react to this how you will, I see the Punisher's backstory for Daredevil being more fit into the whole Wilson Fisk, Kingpin sort of thing, and the fact that he's, like, quote-unquote, out of the picture, but he's still somewhat in the picture. We're probably not going to see him in season two. We'll probably see, like, maybe flashbacks or something like that.
But I feel like they're going to step him back this season. I don't think we'll see him.
Yeah.
But I think that there's going to be a power vacuum, and we'll get some new interesting mob characters for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I've not read about more casting, but I imagine we're going to have... It's not just going to be Punisher. I mean, there's got to be someone for him to hunt, right?
So
there's going to be new people to fill that massive power vacuum of those four crime syndicates that fell apart.
Yeah. True. I could see Punisher being victimized by one of those, like, directly or indirectly, by one of those crime syndicates, and him going after one of them at the same time as Daredevil. That's how they cross paths, and that's how they sort of realize, like, wait, you're trying to kill this guy in this way? Wait, I'm just trying to deliver justice. What do you mean, justice? And then them having that huge argument, which will probably span two or three episodes on Netflix, and just... I don't know, them clashing as a result of just necessity.
So what I want to see from both Punisher and Daredevil in this season, I want Punisher to get caught at some point late in the season, and I want Murdock to try to defend him.
Hmm.
I think that would be really interesting.
I could see that as being an introduction point. Just because that's how, like, those, like, heroes in plain sight sort of situations work out. Like, with Clark Kent or with Peter Parker. Like,
I mean, it could also be...
Oh, get me pictures of Spider-Man. I could get you pictures of Spider-Man. And then it's, like, a selfie with the camera that Peter Parker has.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I mean, that wasn't in the movies. That was just a cartoon. But you don't actually see as much of that in, like, the mainstream films. You more so just see, like, oh, Tony Stark, everybody knows he's Iron Man. Or, what's his name? Who's Captain America?
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
I forgot.
Steve Rogers.
Steve Rogers.
Which, I mean, that's interesting.
I almost said Chris Evans. Which is not untrue.
Chris Evans is actually Captain America.
He's actually, Now we know.
For now, at least. We'll see about that.
For now. Oh, actually, speaking of that, I remember, like, a couple of years ago, we saw an article that said, like, Chris Evans was set for, like... 4 or 5 more
Oh, is he actually signed for a few more? Okay.
No, like, that was, like, a few years ago. Like, it's probably coming this term.
It's probably coming up, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but the guy who played Bucky was signed up for, like, 9 movies.
Yeah, I think that's actually, they're probably setting that up. I mean,
4, yeah.
That happened in the comic books, that Bucky took over the role of Captain America eventually. And I imagine Chris Evans is not getting paid as much as he would like to, or as much as he could make in other movies.
Yeah, probably not. But,
Yeah, speaking of Captain America, that's a whole other thing we could talk about. There's been a lot of adaptations of Captain America over the years, and they make the Punisher movies look amazing.
What, the overlay between...
Oh, the old Captain America movies are a treasure of trash cinema.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the 1990 Captain America movie where they actually put plastic ears over his real ears. On the suit.
What?
Oh, it's weird, man.
Oh, God. That just sounds like a bad trip.
It is a bad trip.
God.
It's actually, there was a joke about it in Winter Soldier when he steals a car. He steals a car, like, 3 times in that 1990 movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great. We'll talk about that another time, I think. That's a good one. There's also a weird one back in, like, the 80s with Reb Brown wearing a motorcycle helmet or something. I think there were a couple of those. Anyway.
That sounds like a weird, like, 80s, like... cashing in on the style sort of thing, like Miami Captain America.
Oh yeah,
or something like that.
The dark history of Marvel movies before the MCU, man.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. There were some dark times. Speaking of the dark times, let's jump back to 1989. Have you seen the 1989 Punisher? I know a lot of people haven't.
The Australia.
It's an Australian style action movie, which means it's very gory. It's very grindhousey. And I'm a total sucker for that kind of thing.
The main villain is a kangaroo man.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He fights a kangaroo.
Does he really?
No, he does not fight a kangaroo. If only, right?
You know, it's hard to tell. I've never heard of Ozploitation until, like, just now.
Yeah, there's a lot of Ozploitation horror out there. Really? Like, there's a movie called Razorback that's actually pretty awesome. Where they're fighting a giant, like, razorback hog, and it's actually pretty terrifying. It's a really well done, like, monster movie.
I think I've come across this. I think it was in between, like, Sharktopus versus, like, Piranacuda or something like that.
It might be. It might have been.
Yeah. Not to start too much of a tangent, but what happened with sci-fi where they began creating all of these, like, weird fusion of creatures.
There's actually an interesting reason for all that.
Really?
So the Asylum, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, is the company that does Sharknado.
Yeah.
And the Mega Shark franchise, as well as a bunch of the Mockbuster movies that look just enough like Blockbuster movies, but like slightly different names so that grandmas that are kind of confused will buy them on home video.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the Asylum. And there's other movies that actually ape on the Asylum concept. So there's like 3 different production companies out there. Which even includes Roger Corman still kicking out there, doing the same kind of thing with like things like Piranaconda.
Oh, yeah, Piranaconda.
Happened is there's always been a popularity of doing monster movies because they're typically at least sort of cheap to do and they're guaranteed like to at least make some money.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case. But I think what happened is CGI...
I've come across so many of those on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. CGI has gotten just cheap enough that you could do it cheaply with computers. And because we can do that... Yeah, everybody's jumping on board. Like, I would say, like, the Sharknado sharks are maybe a little less convincing as the Deep Blue Sea sharks from, like, 99 or whenever that was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is basically the same animation.
It looks really similar, but it's because the technology's gotten cheaper, I think.
Yeah.
But,
they don't have to... worry about animating LL Cool J into any of the Sharknado movies.
Yeah, I hear his hat is like a shark's fin. but yeah, so that is a slight bit of a tangent, but at least we don't have to worry about a CGI Punisher. So back to the 1989 movie, before we got onto all that, what I thought was really distinct about the Dolph Lundgren version of the Punisher, he had an interesting, really dark sense of humor. He did a lot of smirking, and he was still as iron as ever as far as his morality code. He killed people without second thought. Mm-hmm. It's a really brutal movie. He also has a weird sidekick who's like a Shakespearean actor who's like a drunk. It's actually pretty interesting.
Are you sure this is an action movie and not a sitcom?
It's
a very important question.
It could be a sitcom if we pitch it. I think it'll happen.
Just put a laugh track in strategically. Oh, God. I saw this thing on AV Club the other day where they ended a bunch of movies with Dire Straits' Walk of Life.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the very last scene in The Matrix. He's like stepping out of the phone booth, putting on his glasses, and you know how he just shoots up and flies away? And they're just playing Walk of Life.
Oh, that's great.
I know. It's really good. He has like a whole website. Where he did, like, it's called, like, the Walk of Life Project or something like that, where it's just the last 2 minutes of a movie, and then it's preceded by, like, a character looking up and Walk of Life plays.
It's perfect. Like that. That's good ending credit music, right?
Yeah, it was really good.
But, so the 1989 Punisher is very weird. It's probably very far. I mean, even the thing that most pissed off fans about this movie is the Punisher does not have the skull on his chest.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, it's not a uniform.
Is this where he's just, like, wearing the black duster and black
shirt? Yeah, pretty much. He's just in, like, a street uniform, which, honestly, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I know that would annoy a lot of loyal fans of it, but, honestly, I think he looks more like just a renegade cop.
Yeah.
And, honestly, if that movie didn't have the, like, title Punisher on it, it would be an awesome vigilante-style movie.
Yeah.
And it is. Like, it's a great, fun movie, but it's not loyal enough to the comics for it to work for a lot of people.
So it doesn't adhere to the comics as much as, like,
oh, no. people would have wanted it to? I doubt that any of those characters are actual characters. Like, it's just he's in a situation where... I like the concept of the movie, though. Like, the concept of the movie does an ethical thing with the Punisher where he has to work with the Italian mob to fight off the Yakuza. Because the Yakuza's trying to take over the entire mob thing, and they're extra ruthless and extra shitty, and have kidnapped all of the children of the Italian mobsters, and they go to Punisher, like, we're fucked, man. And he's like, I'm gonna kill you anyway, but this is kinda shitty. It takes some convincing. But yeah, he actually works hand-in-hand with the Italian mob in this movie, and it's really interesting.
That is interesting.
And of course, that doesn't go well forever, but temporary alliance. But the Yakuza is also great. I love, I don't remember the name of the woman they got to play the head Yakuza, but you also have a female boss of the Yakuza in this movie who's excellent.
That's interesting.
It's a solid little gritty action movie. I'm a big fan of that movie. But I think it easily could be said it's not much of a Punisher movie.
Yeah.
Which, again, when it comes to adaptations, do you want it to be an accurate adaptation of the source material? Or do you want it to be a new vision of the same concept? And I think, as far as unique vision goes, I think that's the best unique vision of the three movies. Like, I think Warzone is more of a straight adaptation of the comics. I think 1989 Punisher is actually a new, fresh take on the character. And I think 2004 Punisher is just a blockbuster movie about the Punisher. It has some good aspects. We'll get to that next.
That doesn't have as much, like, MCU development in it. Just because it wasn't really
I mean, I don't think MCU. It was part of the MCU, because that was back when it was owned by Sony, maybe? It was one that of the other studios had Punisher, and then it, after X number of years, it, like, I think it's built in 10 years or something without a movie, it goes back to Marvel, and that's what happened with Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Punisher.
Isn't that what happened recently with Fantastic Four?
Fantastic Four, good lord, that would be another one to do one of these on. Yeah,
this is also just the brainstorming podcast where we just, like, talk about every single superhero we know about. Yeah.
So, why they were making those movies is they try to make them like clockwork so they retain the rights. So even if they push out a really awful Fantastic Four movie, they keep the rights for another 10 years to maybe do it right next time. Really famously, back in 1994, I don't remember which group had the rights, but they hired Roger Corman to make a cheap as possible Fantastic Four movie. Because they knew he could make a movie on a budget.
Is this the one that they talk about in Arrested Development?
Yeah, it's a real thing. It is a real thing, what they were talking about in that.
Really?
Yeah, it never got released, but they made it specifically to hold on to the rights for another 10 years. And it never got released, so I don't know if that company kept the rights or if it reverted somewhere else. But it is actually a charming little movie. It was never finished. Like, there's a lot of audio problems with the bootlegs that are out there, and the effects weren't finished. But, like,
yeah.
I have not seen the latest Fantastic Four movie, but by all accounts, it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate that first Fantastic Four movie they did. I did not see Rise of the Silver Surfer, but didn't hear any good things. I thought that first one was just okay.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of television actors. They got cheap. And I didn't even hate Doctor Doom in that particularly. But I think that Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie is so cheesy that it just sort of fits. I think it really fits that superhero team. But, yeah, that is exactly the case, and it's because they decided not to try to do another Punisher movie that why that's back in the MCU, and likewise, they certainly weren't going to do anything with Daredevil, and thus welcome Daredevil to the MCU.
Yeah.
Going
back to the Punisher for a second, I remember reading somewhere that somebody suspected, so in Winter Soldier, Captain America Winter Soldier,
right.
There was one scene where Nick Fury was, like, getting attacked in his... like loaded SUV,
which is one of the best car scenes, like car chase scenes I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I know, and it was really good. I wasn't expecting it in a Marvel movie. I was more so just expecting
Winter Soldier,
like a melee fight scene. More so,
Winter Soldier was a technically marvelous movie.
It was really good.
The action choreography in that is spectacular. Like,
yeah,
it's a very good like action movie.
Yeah, it was really good. And somebody wrote like speculation that like one of the black vans that like didn't really fit with the other black vans might have been the Punisher that was just like driving in to like fuck shit up or something like that.
Just to fuck shit up.
Basic, or I mean, it was probably more calculating or more technical.
So my thing is,
fuck shit up.
I have a few reasons not to think that, because it feels really random that he would be there and they wouldn't spotlight it. But also, that was DC, and I think Punisher typically is New York based, and I don't know if he drifts far out of that or not. But
oh yeah, that was DC.
That was DC. Yeah,
I forgot.
But
I always just assume that they're in New York.
I mean, I'm interested in how they work in Punisher's backstory in this new version, because like it's actually totally glossed over in two of the three adaptations so far.
Mm-hmm.
They do his backstory in the 2004 one. They don't cover it in Warzone. They very briefly mention his family died,
mm-hmm.
And they show a flashback, I think. And then in the 1989 one, it's just his family died and then he went crazy. But it actually starts in medias res of the Punisher story. He's already established.
So he's already,
they already know who he is.
He's already crazy.
He's already crazy. So in this new one, I feel like he's not coming out of nowhere. He must have, like, I think that we're going to have to start with what happened to Punisher. Like, because otherwise he would have already been around. Like, I assume his family dies and then he loses his nuts and, like,
it's absolutely going to have something to do with, like, the power vacuum from Wilson Fisk.
Which
being locked up
leaves Daredevil arguably culpable, which is also interesting.
Hmm.
In a really, like, second, third degree way, but still, I think that would be enough that Murdoch would have, he'd probably hit the confession booth on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have a Catholic superhero, right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
We need a super priest. That would throw him for a loop, wouldn't it?
Oh, this actually reminds me, have you ever seen this movie? It's on Netflix called Super.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's James Gunn's movie he did.
Yeah, it's James Gunn.
Before Guardians. It's awesome.
Yeah, it has Nathan Fillion in it, Ryan Wilson.
As Bible Man, basically.
Yeah, as Bible Man. Yeah, that's what I thought of when you said Catholic superhero.
James Gunn
yeah.
has a dark sense of humor. And I wonder, that came through a little bit in Guardians, but like he's done some weird movies, man.
Super was like so good.
If you want to kill some time with a really dark humor of James Gunn, for a while before he did Guardians, he did a web series called PG Porn, where he got people like Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk to do these really dark comedy skits of, like, fake porn, in which something goes terribly wrong in each of them. It's pretty great. It's delightful. On to Punisher, let's talk about 2004 a little bit.
Yeah.
When this movie came out,
this is more so you just lecturing me on 2004. I remember, like, screenshots, and I know what John Travolta looked like in that movie.
I feel like most people saw this movie. I don't know exactly how good business it did, but I felt like it justified a sequel, and it's just the production history got weird.
Maybe it's one of those things where, like, people saw it, but it didn't really stick with people.
I think that's what happened. I think it was a pretty big hit, though. I loved it when it came out. And I think that was a little bit the timing. I was much younger, but, like,
And it was just cool to see, like, an action.
It was cool.
Yeah, yeah, like all the...
And I was already a big fan of Deep Blue Sea, and seeing Thomas Jane as the Punisher is awesome. The dude's... The guy's a badass. He still does a lot of B-level movies and stuff, but I don't think he's going to be starring in any big vehicles anymore, but...
Yeah, it's like a Bruce Campbell.
I actually think he's a pretty good Punisher. Yeah. As a Punisher, I think he nailed it, and I think, in particular, in Dirty Laundry, he's a very good Punisher. Mm-hmm. 2004, John Travolta was the wrong choice as the mob boss. I think he's way too flamboyant. He chews too much scenery in that movie. In a movie that should be focused on Punisher, it gets really bogged down with John Travolta and really bad haircuts. He's still got that haircut from Swordfish that looks awful.
Yeah, oh yeah, ugh.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Whenever I think of John Travolta, I just think of, like, what kind of shitty haircut does he have in this movie?
I have not done a lot of research on this, but I believe what probably happened, because this happens a lot when you're trying to greenlight a movie, I think they wanted Thomas Jane for this role bad, but I don't think the studio was willing to go with Thomas Jane because he wasn't a bankable enough star, and they wanted a star in this movie.
So they got Travolta as, like, the anchor.
And Travolta was the anchor to make the deal happen.
Right, yeah, I can see that happening.
Man, imagine if they had gotten, like, a really good character actor to do that. Like, I don't know, even somebody like an Italian, like Chaz Palminteri or something like that. Like, somebody who's actually like a natural mobster type.
Oh, yeah.
Would have been great. I think somebody could have owned that role much better. Like, even in John Wick, you have, like, apart from Keanu Reeves, who's great in it, they just have character actors throughout the whole thing, and they all do a really good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, 2004 is a flawed movie, but there's enough things, like, all the B-level villains in it, outside of John Travolta, are awesome. You've got the guy with the guitar who's got his kick-ass car thing, Kevin Nash, who was, at the time, a really famous wrestler, and there's a stunt in that movie that actually ended his career.
Really?
Yeah, so, he had a fake shoulder on for a stabbing sequence, where he gets stabbed in the shoulder, and he just sort of blows it off, but he missed. Thomas Jane missed his mark and actually stabbed Kevin Nash in the shoulder. Oh. And it caused enough shoulder problems, he wasn't able to wrestle for much longer after that.
Wow.
And he wound up retiring. Which is unfortunate, because, honestly, I mean, he was a really, like, I was into wrestling at the time, and Kevin Nash was, like, he's a big dude and he was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I thought he was great in that role as just sort of the stoic Russian.
Yeah.
But even that, I talked to somebody about this recently, that Russian character is apparently kind of, like, quasi-comedic in the comics. He's, like, a big fan of superheroes and immigrated to the U.S., like, with the idea of meeting superheroes and, like, when he becomes, like, a heavy for the mob and this sort of thing, he's still, like, kind of internally giddy at the idea of meeting superheroes.
Yeah.
And that just sounds great to me. It probably wouldn't have worked in this really kind of... I mean, 2004 is probably the lightest of the movie that has been made, but it's still a very dark movie.
Yeah.
Also, that is one of my favorite scenes in any Punisher movie, when he is torturing, like, the... low-level mob henchman, and he's doing it, like, psychologically. He's using a popsicle stick and telling him that he's using, like, a hot iron.
Mm-hmm.
That was hilarious. That was wonderful.
I
don't know if you remember that sequence or not, but it's really great.
No, I don't think I do.
So he's, like, he's trying to interrogate him about something about the mob, like a location of something. Yeah. And he's, like, showing him, like, heating an iron right in front of him. And then he's going behind him and asks him, like, the question or whatever. And then he takes out a popsicle and then pokes him on the back. And because of the power of suggestion, he thinks he just prodded him with a hot iron. It's actually just this little popsicle. And then after he tells him the information, he just puts the popsicle in his mouth. And he's like, what? It's great. I love it.
Oh, God.
Like, that's I kind of like the Punisher with a weird sense of humor. Like,
yeah.
You can't take it totally seriously. And I think they're going to not do that with Bernthal. I don't think that'll fit the Daredevil show. But
I think
really
generally,
like that.
Yeah, and I think generally with, like, the backstory that you see in Punisher, you're not really going to see a character who's going to want to have a lot of fun with what he does. He seems to be very, very hell-bent on revenge.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's interesting because it shows, like, how they just designed or interpreted the characters and... how that sort of fit with what they were trying to get at. And...
Yeah, very much agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2004, I'm trying to think if there was anything else. I mean, he definitely looked like the Punisher. No doubt about that. He had, like, I think they got the design of the character down pretty well there.
Yeah.
I think, again, when we're talking about Warzone, which is a few years later, as we mentioned, there was a lot of production problems with that led it to be a very odd movie that got a pretty soft release.
Yeah.
Didn't do very well. There's actually a great episode of How Did This Get Made podcast,
mm-hmm.
where they actually have Lexi Alexander, the director, to talk about what happened and how she wound up doing this movie despite having no experience doing action movies.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. Lexi Alexander, speaking of which, is a great follow on Twitter. She's a very interesting and very insightful and candid director. She is definitely does not have reservations to talk about the business in a very honest way.
What else has she done?
I'm not sure what she's done recently. Mm-hmm. The two things I know are Punisher Warzone and Green Street Hooligans, which is a movie with, I think, Elijah Wood, maybe? From a number of years ago about soccer hooliganism. And it's played more like a gang movie.
Yeah.
It's a good watch. Huh. Like, there's a lot of parts of it that reminded me of The Warriors.
Hmm.
I haven't seen it in years, though. But it's a fun movie. And it's definitely an interesting introduction, particularly for Americans, I think, like, to soccer culture in a way that I don't think we have exposure to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's totally worth checking out.
So,
Warzone, I guess.
Warzone. Yeah, talk about Warzone.
I like Warzone in concept. One of the things that turned me off about it is that it uses a lot of CGI blood, which got to be a big thing around that time.
Yeah.
So
that was like 2008.
2008 to 2011. Like, there's another movie I really liked from the same era called The Midnight Meat Train. Great title. And I love that movie to death. And it was Bradley Cooper before he got really big. You had... the heavy who played the Juggernaut, and he was in a bunch of Guy Ritchie movies, and I'm blanking on his name.
I know who you mean. Yeah, I don't know the name either, but I know who you mean.
It'll come back to me. But it's a fun movie. But the biggest problem with that movie is it uses exclusively CGI blood, and it looks fine, and it's a cheap option, and it's not as messy on set, but it doesn't age well.
Yeah.
And when I watched Punisher Warzone, I did not see it in theaters. I saw it a few years later, and it just sat with me wrong. And as much as, like, all these elaborate stunts and stuff are really interesting, and, you know, at one point, I believe Punisher blows up some parkour people. Some parkour people. I'll just call them the parkour.
The parkour.
And there's a lot of, like, elaborate stunts. There's some great firefights. I mean, it makes Boondock Saints look like the trash that it is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Like, as an action movie, it's a fun watch. But, like, there were enough things about it that it felt a little too comic booky, which, I mean, for some people, that's exactly what they wanted. And I think big fans of The Punisher, it was perfect. But for me, like, it missed the spirit and, like, the visceral aspect of the 1989 movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it also missed the sort of honest, dramatic, sort of slow burn grit feel of, because it was so much, there was so much enhancement to it and, like, computer-generated stuff, it lacked a lot of that grit, like, that actual, like, tangible grit that you got of the set design and stuff like that in the 2004 movie, which is another thing. I love the set design in the 2004 movie. I love his apartment, and I love that building and how it sort of falls apart over the course of the movie. I think that's fantastic. Warzone is a fun movie. It's a fun... None of these movies, that's the one thing I will say, all these movies, I think, are fun to watch. All three of them so far. But yeah, I don't know. Warzone might be... It depends on your belief in the nature of adaptation. What you want from adaptation. I think Punisher Warzone, that people that want a direct translation, it's as good as you're going to get maybe any comic book movie. But if you want an original vision, I think that 89's the answer for Punisher. I think it's a great... new look on the Punisher with an interesting storyline, and I think he fits great with an exploitation style action movie with a lot of blood and guts, and it allows him to be brutal.
You mean
the Dolph Lundgren 89 Punisher movie? Yeah. And the 2004 movie is somewhere in the middle of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some comic booky elements. I liked that they kept the Russian design the same with that sort of goofy white and red shirt. I wish John Travolta wasn't in it, or they'd cast somebody else, but I think the Punisher looks right. It feels like a Punisher movie. And then Punisher Warzone feels like it was pulled out of a comic book, for better or worse. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts? I mean, I know that you've seen at least... which ones have you seen? You haven't seen the 89 one, for sure.
I think I've seen chunks of the 2004 one. Try to think whether or not I've seen Warzone, because... It sounds familiar, but I'm trying to think to, like, whether or not I've seen it or whether or not I just, like, really retain seeing the trailer to it.
Honestly, the trailer, that trailer pretty much gets the point across.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing, though. I actually think that that one, for... I would definitely recommend watching Warzone, just because so many people missed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was really... They didn't promote it much. It came out, like, I think they released it on Christmas against a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I think that there's enough things that are like, eh. Like, I don't really like the design of the Scarface character, played by... What's his name? Who played McNulty on The Wire. Who's a great actor. And I'm blanking on his name. But, I mean, it's interesting to have a dynamic villain against the Punisher, but really, I feel like a Punisher movie typically is about Punisher. Punisher is a dark enough and compelling enough character that you don't need a Batman villain.
No, you don't. And it's also, like, the unique thing about the Punisher is, this is just getting back into the concept of, like, light and dark and shades of gray in between, and Punisher is the epitome of shades of gray. Like, just until recently, I really didn't think of Punisher as being more of a villain or less of a hero. I was just sort of, like, unsure. Like, wait, what is this guy? I probably actually, like, if I had to pick one side, I would have said villain. But the fact that he has all this narrative behind him as a hero, and he sort of fits, like, the classical concept of anti-hero. Like, he does good, but he does good for his own reasons. Or he does good, but he doesn't cooperate with others. Makes me sort of think, like, yeah, there really isn't, like, a template that we could fit Punisher into. So that's also why you see, like, the interpretation, like, the Dolph Lundgren version or the 2004 and 2008 versions of Punisher, and sort of how they take, like, sort of different directions from that. And it's sort of just, it sort of just is indicative of, like, the style of the character in and of itself. Like, for Iron Man, we know he's definitely a good guy. Superman, we know, is definitely a good guy. Spider-Man, you know, all those, like, big blockbuster ones, like, we know definitively who's good and who's bad, but Punisher sort of, like, obfuscates all of that.
You're right. I
think a wrench into it.
There's also, like, a lot of these characters have been done many times. Superman has been done many times. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man's always been done many times. But, like, there's less wiggle room with those. I feel like there's such a really hard template of Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. There's a really hard template of Clark Kent as the most boring person in the universe, mm-hmm. who happens to be really strong and stuff.
who happens to also be Superman.
Yeah, exactly. I find Superman really boring. I think they're trying their damnedest to make an interesting Superman movie, and best of luck to him.
The only way they could do that is if they make, like, a really interesting villain. And that's what they keep trying to do with, like, bring back Lex Luthor and Zod. Stuff like that.
And maybe I like the concept of this Batman-Superman thing, but I'm not sold. We'll see. We'll see how that movie is.
It sort of just seems like a cheap concept.
Yeah, it looks...
IMHO. It just seems like a cheap concept.
I was a big fan of the World's Finest comic series, which is where Batman and Superman traveled in time, getting up the shenanigans.
like saving the day or just getting into shit?
Yes, both, actually. Both. Have you ever heard of the website superdickery.com?
Well, now I have.
Yeah, okay, so the concept here is that Superman, throughout his history in comic books, has always been a bit of a dickhead.
Yeah.
And they've always exploited that on comic book covers. So this whole website was just comic book covers from over the years of Superman doing awful things, like watching Aquaman dehydrate in the desert while drinking a glass of water.
Oh, God. Oh, those things. Yeah. I think I've seen, like, Darkly's interpretation of it or something like that.
Yeah, so I had a comic, a World's Finest comic, that I always loved that I saw show up on this website once. And it was Superman and Batman at the Salem Witch Trials. And Batman on a stake, and Superman claiming he was a witch while using his laser vision to set a fire under him.
Oh, God.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, that's what I wanted from a Batman Superman movie, but that will literally never happen ever.
No. Unless it becomes one of those weird, like, B-movie things that they slip under the radar and immediately put on Netflix to make grandmas think that they're watching Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, like Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Let's let canon do all the superhero movies from now on. Back to Punisher, whatever we were talking about.
We were talking about Punisher
at one point. So I think this is a rare case where I don't think any of these... I think people have mixed feelings about all of these Punisher movies.
Yeah.
But I think they're all watchable, at least okay movies.
Yeah.
And honestly, I recommend seeing all of them. I think all three of them are totally worth watching. And I think what we're going to get... We are not going to get a Punisher-centric Daredevil season 2. Punisher is going to be there as a vessel to develop Daredevil.
We're going to get character
development. Yeah, this is not going to be focused on Punisher as a character. We're not going to be seeing Punisher develop. I think Punisher is going to be there as a challenge to Daredevil. And I think people need to be prepared to not get a deep Punisher here. I think Punisher is more going to be like a constant force. I think they're going to portray him as a very iron and unyielding thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the concept that they used in The Dark Knight of, like, an immovable object and an unstoppable force. This is going to be
the character.
Yeah, the counterweight to Daredevil. Yeah. And I think they're going to play with that. Like, I think that having Murdoch in a position where he needs to defend him in court and have to internally deal with the issues of defending this method that at once he is using himself but tries to mitigate with his personal morality. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot of Matt Murdoch in confession booths kind of awkwardly talking about this dude killing a bunch of people, which, again, gosh, it's wonderful having Catholic superheroes. I am still what I really want. Let's hope someday in the future of Daredevil we get some sort of, like, super-powered evil pedophile priest or something, like, to really fuck with Daredevil.
That's the priest we've been seeing in season one of Daredevil so far.
He's gonna get hit with, like, radioactive beams or something.
Or he's gonna slip in the goop that gives Daredevil his powers originally.
And that's right.
Yeah, for some reason, it's instead of giving him superpowers, it's just gonna make him, like, a pedophile.
Just a quick tangent on Daredevil. Why exactly was there radioactive goop in Hell's Kitchen? Like, what's the point? Like, there's no way that you were moving radioactive goop through the center of Manhattan. Like, for what? Was it going? Where was it coming from? Because it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, also, considering the context, that happened in, like, what, the 1970s or 80s or whatever?
Yeah, right?
So that was, like, before, like, there was actually, like, anybody actually checking out, like, wait a second, what's in those huge, like, leaky drums on the truck?
Maybe there was just some eccentric billionaire in Long Island that just wanted to ship dangerous materials around the country, or around New York, Manhattan area, just for shits and giggles.
Howard Stark.
What
if that whole truck was, like, a Stark Industries thing?
Oh, let's really tie this all together.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I thought some serial mention Stark Industries at one point. Maybe it was Jessica Jones.
I think so.
Somebody mentioned
Stark. Yeah, Stark Industries is big enough that it's been around. And they've mentioned, like, the tower and obviously the Fallout.
Yeah, the Battle of New York.
That was my favorite thing about the street level of Marvel right now, is the way that they have justified Hell's Kitchen being a piece of shit is that it's the Avengers' fault. Because if you've been to Hell's Kitchen anytime recently, it's pretty swanky. It's a pretty nice-looking area.
It's very up and up, yeah.
Yeah, Daredevil did a good job. I didn't hear anything about it, but apparently in the real world, Daredevil is actually the force of gentrification.
or anti-gentrification in this case.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's Daredevil was rent hiking. Yeah. It serves about the same purpose as a vigilante blind dude.
I know, and that's the weird thing about Daredevil is, and the series in general, not really the superhero itself, is that, like, all the characters are always talking about how we have to do better for Hell's Kitchen. It's like, it's, I don't know, it just seems very, like, localized and kind of odd, because it's like, they never talk about, like, specifics, or, like, the one time they talk about specifics, they mention something about real estate.
That's like in Columbus, like, being really like, we need to, like, specifically rid all crime in Franklinton, and then, like, people over on the east side are like, the fuck, man, don't move them over here, like, you're just moving the crime around. Like, I feel like I think that actually happened in Marvel at one point.
Yeah.
The Daredevil successfully rid all crime from Hell's Kitchen, and they just went into the other boroughs and stuff, and then everybody else got pissed off about it. It's like, come on, dude.
It just happens in waves. Yeah. That makes sense.
Although, at least he's managing his expectations, right? Like,
you
could probably clean up the crime in your immediate cul-de-sac pretty easily without superpowers.
Yeah.
That would just take some armament, I think.
But in order to do that in Hell's Kitchen, you need to do...
have vague supersonic powers.
He's like a bat.
I feel like he's mostly just a ninja. Like, he also has those ill-defined blind powers.
Yeah, but it's also, like, infrared, so it's like, I remember, like, the argument he had with Foggy, it's like, so you can see, yes, and, like, that, I don't know.
I feel like the way he phrased that was, are you even blind, like, in the end of the dramatic, and that was so funny, it shouldn't have been so funny, but it was, like, even blind?
Well, it's also because coming up to that moment, we had seen Foggy as being, like, sort of this comic relief character, so it's like, everybody sort of was like, oh, what sort of goofy antics is Foggy up to? Oh, he's giving cigars to this police officer to give to his mother so that he can get information. It's like, that's just an insane, goofy situation. And after that, you see, like, the uptick of, like, Foggy, who's, like, concerned for Murdoch. And so it's sort of, like, weird from that. And that's sort of, like, why we thought that was hilarious. When he's like, are you even blind?
That's another thing.
Because you also, like, just heard him, like, it's basically him just going, like, bro. Like, you could hear that.
Yeah. The Marvel Street level, speaking of just adaptations, why I have every confidence this Punisher is going to be good, at least. They've nailed everybody. Like, I think it's been great. Like, Foggy, the only previous time that had been adapted onto film that I can think of was the Daredevil movie. Which Daredevil was movies. Ben Affleck. Do you remember who played Foggy in that?
No, I just remember Ben
John
Affleck.
John Favreau, who directed Iron Man. And he's a comedic actor and played Foggy in that. Before, like, it's actually speculated that the development he made with Paul Feige or something like that, who does Marvel, is actually how he wound up with Iron Man, is because he got to know him, because he was a producer on that movie.
Really?
But yeah, like, John Favreau is a decent comedic actor.
Yeah.
But this guy on Daredevil, I've seen him in things before. I think he was a child actor and was in stuff. Like, he has a very distinctive face. He's awesome. He's great on Daredevil. Like, if you pay that much attention into making a lovable character out of kind of a minor figure like that.
Was he also in, like, Freaks and Geeks or something
like that? He might have been. He might have been in something. He's in something that I looked it up and it's like, oh, he was in that. Cool.
I remember seeing stand-up of his a while ago. I also used to get Jon Favreau and Judd Apatow mixed up for the longest time.
Yeah. That's understandable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that this season of Daredevil is going to be, it's going to be good. It's going to be good no matter what, because they've done a really good job of building Matt Murdock. Foggy is a great emotional center of the show. They've got a bunch of a nice accessory cast of characters with the Night Nurse.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting she's now, like, a standard character.
I wonder how much they'll use her. Like, they're eventually going to start using her more, but they only used her in one episode of Jessica Jones for the most part. Or maybe there were a couple, but
was it the same nurse? Much.
Yeah, it was the same nurse. It was Rosario Dawson. Is like, I don't know what they've named that character, but the character from the comics is a combination of a few, and one of them is the Night Nurse, which is a nurse who specializes in treating superheroes.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it is. Yeah.
Which is a brilliant idea. Like, that whole thing at the end of Jessica Jones trying to treat Luke Cage was brilliant. It was great. Yeah, I thought that was great. So far, I have every confidence that what we're going to get is going to be a good Punisher. I don't think we're going to get a revelation Punisher. This isn't going to be a Punisher TV show, though that might happen eventually. I think this is going to be about Daredevil. It's going to be focused on Matt Murdock and how Punisher affects him, rather than a exploration. Like, it's not going to be the same way that we got Kingpin. Like, we got holistic, interesting version of Kingpin that was a new version that we hadn't seen before. I think Punisher is not going to be that. I think Punisher is going to be exactly what we expect, and it's going to be focused on how Murdoch deals with this presence.
Yeah, it's really just going to see if... It's really just going to, like, develop Daredevil's character.
Which is going to be fine. Like, there's no problem with that. But I feel like a lot of people might be expecting more than that. I think Jon Bernthal, like, he's got the look of a unyielding Punisher. Like, I actually thought at first, when I first saw him for this, he's like a really, he's got a thick neck and a really sort of stout head.
His hair's cut short, so it, like,
he doesn't, like, when I think scarier of Punisher, I always think of sort of a smaller head and a much bulkier, like, taller guy. But I think he'll be a really good,
like the Thomas Jane
of Thomas Jane, like, in general when I think of Punisher. But, like, I think he looks great. He looks like a bulldog. Like, I think he's gonna, like, I think they're going to let him do some really cool stuff as Punisher, and he's going to be brutal, and it'll be really fun to watch. But I'm interested to see if they do give Punisher his own series, which they may very well do.
Yeah.
That'll be, I think, interesting. Like, where would they go with it? Because these street-level heroes are very psychological. Like, the way they've been doing, like, Jessica Jones, how I assume they will do Luke Cage, how they've done Daredevil, it's a very deep analysis of the character. And I don't know how you would do that as much with the Punisher, because I feel like if you dig too deep into Punisher, you're not going to like what you see, and you're going to have a hard time identifying with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we also sort of saw, like, that sort of level of, like, heavy drama in Jessica Jones and shows like that. If they did decide to make a standalone Punisher film, or, sorry, TV show, I could see it sort of taking a direction of of being more like what his backstory is, and maybe have the show itself happen in tandem with what we saw in this upcoming season of Daredevil. Even though that's not something they've done before, really. Every show, as they come out, seems to sort of build upon other things. Like, I don't see Luke Cage as being that way. It's probably going to build off of what happened in Jessica Jones. But I don't know.
It's interesting point to be made there about the way the cinematic universe concept is working. Going back, like in 10, 15, 20 years, do you think this will be confusing to the next generation of audiences? Because, like, the nomenclature, like Captain America, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Captain America, Civil War, we don't use a lot of numeric, apart from Iron Man was 1, 2, 3. Yeah, Iron Man
was the only one.
But, like, Avengers, Age of Ultron is not Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
Thor, Dark World.
Yeah, in the way that the chronology actually affects, like, there's a very specific chronology to the releasing of these things that happens more or less in chronological order, maybe not exactly, but, like, will this be confusing, like, when somebody goes back and watches Jessica Jones in 20 years? Will that be, like, they need to have the context of those previous movies? Like, I feel like maybe they haven't put as much thought into the future of going back to watch these. Like, what's happened with comic books is that their universe of the comic books has gotten so big and so unmanageable that they've had to do cold reboots, like, multiple times.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. The way I see it is sort of happening, and I could sort of understand what they're trying to do, is they're trying to package the entire MCU into one world. I mean, obviously, because it's the MCU. Yeah,
it's a combined universe.
Yeah, yeah, just by definition. But I could see that as being tricky to follow, like, in 10 or 15 years when you go back and you're like, hey, who is this? Why is this Gary Shandling guy showing up in these two movies? From I thought I remember him from Iron Man. Now he's in this Captain America thing. Not that somebody in 15 or 20 years is going to know who Gary Shandling is. Yeah. And if they do, props to them for sure. But yeah, I could see it as like they're trying to set that up. And I could honestly see like maybe by the time Infinity War is over, that's where they'll like sort of like seal the envelope on like the MCU. And try and say, like, this is everything that happened in Marvel in this one gigantic bubble. And try and market it as, like, that collection.
Maybe. So, I'm really curious. Like, they've been going all out on trying to do this Infinity War concept, which has to be spread over a lot of movies to set up. And they're trying to culminate it in two movies a year apart from each other.
Yep.
Like, splitting the climax in the two movies. I mean, it could work really well. I think that people will be really excited. They'll leave it on a cliffhanger, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
That's why they designed those two-part movies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's worked for other franchises. Like, they did it with Harry Potter. They've done it for, like, whatever the fuck, Hunger Games or whatever.
Hunger Games. Twilight.
So maybe...
Not that I know the Twilight one. I just know the Twilight one.
Right.
Head to preface.
But I don't know. I wonder... If that, you gotta wonder when is the bubble gonna burst with these comic book adaptations. Right now, I think part of this is because in the past, like, the reason a lot of these really older comic book adaptations are so bad is because nobody wanted to make them. So it was groups like the Canon Group that would go after these because they would make these cheap movies. Because
they knew they had access to it, yeah.
Like, literature's been adapted forever, and I think the reason is because the floodgates opened, and suddenly it was okay to make a comic book or a graphic novel movie, and that's why we've had so many over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, it's more of... that it's a new medium that we can adapt is why it's been so popular. And also, I mean, you have a guaranteed audience for a lot of these because there's already fans of it. People will come into the theaters and studios love to know that if they're going to make a movie, if there's a guaranteed audience behind it, it's an adaptation. They're going to love it. Which is part of the concept here. There are so many adaptations now. And there's, I mean, film has always had a lot of adaptations since the beginning. But I think the issue here that to me is a lot of people are tired of it. And I think that's a lot of people are against the very concept of an adaptation now because they want to see original ideas.
Yeah.
But I think adaptations, like I said, The Shining is an adaptation. And a lot of really great movies, like Jaws, is a very original version of a book.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of great adaptations. And I
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park is another...
That's the only other adaptation I know.
That's the only one that you can
think that's
of.
That's the only one.
Yeah. 2001 A Space Odyssey is an adaptation.
Oh, yeah, that's an adaptation.
Yeah. Kubrick loved doing really good adaptations.
Yeah, he did.
So, I guess the idea with this podcast, dissent with modification or whatever...
Do we really offer much dissent?
We did not dissent at all with this. Like, usually there's going to be one of these we're going
to
fucking hate.
I think we have to, like, establish character roles for the rest of these. Like, I'll be Descent and you be Modification. Or we'll just like alternate between roles. So like depending on what we're actually going over, you could be Descent and then I'll be Modification.
Yeah, so I'll like
Okay, actually this is a good idea. How about if like we begin by you making like a thesis and then I'll either Descent or modify it so I agree with it.
Oh, this sounds brilliant.
This is getting better. Yeah,
we planned this out very well. We were just about to hit the hour mark of this, so I think we've talked out Punisher, I think, here, as well as a lot of other tangents, which is the nature of podcasts, as I understand it.
And those will probably be future podcasts, so.
Oh, yeah, we'll continue talking about this kind of thing. Probably we'll be talking about comic books for literally forever. So, this was the first episode, or maybe the prototype episode, episode zero.
The demo, per se. Or if we put this out, it might be episode one, so.
Maybe. Zero. We'll see. This was the Descent with Modification podcast, like dissent as in like disagreement. But in this case, we didn't disagree with anything. Maybe we'll think this out better in the future. But check out all those Punisher movies and check out misentropy.com, the Misentropy movie blog, as well as the Plotopsy podcast, the short form podcast I also do on the blog there. And check out those Punisher movies, and we will catch you next time for some other garbage adaptations of something.
Or garbage interpretations.
Yeah,
let's be
proper, like garbage interpretations.
Yes. Very good. Yes.
Yeah, excellent. All right. So until next time.
Peace.